Mamba Mitzia tells us that we'll start with what's simple and then we'll go to what the Gemara is unsure about. What's simple to the Gemara is that on Shabbos we may not ask a non-Jew to do something for us that we ourselves may not do. That the Gemara is sure about. What the Gemara is not sure about is how this applies to other Isurim in the Torah. Is it limited to Shabbos, a din in Shabbos? Or this is a din in Kala Torah Kula? No. The Gemara is really inconclusive. The Gemara tries to prove it, the Gemara pushes off the proofs, and the Gemara does not come to a conclusive determination. So there's even a question in the Rishonim as to what exactly our practice lahalacha should be. The prevailing view is that we're supposed to be machmer, that the proofs are substantial enough to indicate that we may not ask a non-Jew to assist us in any other Isur of the Torah besides Shabbos as well. There are Rishonim that limit Amir la'akum just to Shabbos and Mishari Surim. They don't use it. So, Lamaisa, we're generally machmer, but if one has a particular problem, it's worth asking a shayla. There are times that we use the other view. Now, why, in fact, is Amir la'akum prohibited? And it could be that this reflects really on the Gemara shayla itself. What the Shaila of the Gemara is. Some Sefer discusses it. Broadly, there are three basic reasons for it. The simplest of the reasons is we have the Novi in Yeshaya, who speaks about Shabbos. And he admonishes us with chivato by asos trochecho, bimtzu chefzicho with a bird of hor. So Chazal derived bimtzu chefzicho, we should not engage in our business practices on Shabbos. Bidaber dover, we should not speak about things on Shabbos which we're not supposed to be doing on Shabbos. I mean, that's not all that's included in that, but that's enough for our purposes for that. And that's recorded by Allah on the Shulchan Aruch. It's the Gemara near the end of Masechta Shabbos. It's recorded in the Shulchan Aruch. So this is the simplest reason. I cannot ask a non-Jew to do something for me on Shabbos because b'davadova, I'm speaking about things that I'm not allowed to do on Shabbos. I'm not allowed to speak about it. That's the simplest reason. Now the implication of that reason, though, would be twofold. If we took solely that reason, so first of all, let's say I asked the non-Jew before Shabbos to do something on Shabbos for me. It wouldn't be prohibited because we're davar davar. On Friday I could talk about anything I want. In terms of malochas, there's no isa. So I could ask, I would be able to ask him on Erev Shabbos. Now, furthermore, when it comes to Shor Isurim, other Isurim in the Torah, why would they be prohibited? V'daba dover doesn't prohibit me. I can talk about every Yisra in the Torah. I just can't talk about violating on Shabbos or things I'm not allowed to do on Shabbos. But that's a din on Shabbos. That doesn't apply to Shor Yisra. So if that were the reason, the sole reason, it would apply to some cases and leave other cases clearly outside the loop. We have a second svar, the goes Maimani cites of Mordechai. He says that in general, the Gemara says in Bab Metzia, the Fayin Aleph on the base, that ain't shlichus la'akum, which means that a non-Jew cannot halachically serve as my agent. So, what are the implications of that? And suppose a husband wants to marry his wife, and he's in New York and she's in California, and for whatever reason, they can't wind up in the same place. Now, the halacha states that he can send a shliach. The shliach could also be Mekadosh. Now, that's fine if he sends a Shliach Yisrael. Suppose the Shliach is a non-Jew. Doesn't work. It's not a Shliach. No Kedusha. It could be, but that's not really our concern here, that a non-Jew may engage a non-Jew as a Shliach. That may, in fact, not be under the limitation that the Gemara places. But for a Jew to engage a non-Jew as a Shliach doesn't work. Yet, L'chumra, at times, we consider the fact that a non-Jew can be the Shliach of a Jew. So therefore, if we view it from the standpoint of Shlichus, Shlichus is that whatever the Shliach does is an extension of the Balabais, of the Mashaleach, of the one that sent him to do it. So therefore it comes out that the Mashaleach did the act on Shabbos. If his Shliach did it, and we say Shlichus L'chumra, and it's also, it's certainly at least on the tzad, that it's not an avera for a goy to do it. He's not Metzuvah on Shabbos. He's not Metzuvah on the Neivah either. So he has no reason that he shouldn't be able to do it. Why shouldn't he do it? So he can be perceived halachically as the Shliach of the Mishaleach. If we take that standpoint, then I couldn't ask the non-Jew, even Erev Shabbos, to do something. Because when he acts on Shabbos, he's acting as my representative. So I'm not allowed to.
How could he be what? Representative of a Jew? He doesn't have a chayach.
So that's the argument. My man says, L'chumra, the Rabbanon considered him a shliach at certain times. L'chumra, not L'kula. Then there's yet a third reason. The third reason is that if I'm that involved in doing this particular act, that I engage the shliach to do it, so I myself may get involved. Perhaps the simple reason for that is that the world says, if you want to do something right, do it yourself. So you engage the shliach, and you may be less than happy with the way he's doing it. So you're all concerned, you know, you're watching him and making sure he's doing it the right way. So you may pitch in yourself to see that it's done the right way. Or afraid that you come to do it on your own. Now, if that's the case, it might not make a difference if it's any Yisur in the Torah. It might not make a difference if it's Erev Shabbos. But it could very well make a difference from that standpoint. Let's say I engage the Shliach in California, and I'm in New York. So I have no connection at all. It's not conceivable that I could be present, but he's doing it. He's nowhere near, he's chutz l'tchum. I can't go there Shabbos. I have no idea what he's doing. I can't observe him. So maybe if we took that svar, we would say that if he were somewhere else, maybe it would be what. So we have three different svaros. And principally, the halacha, we're machmer like all the svaros. So, the first svar of Adabar Dover is only a din in Shabbos, not a din in any other Isa. So perhaps that's part of the Gemara Shaila. Why exactly is Amir la'akum Asar on Shabbos? Is it also because of Shlichus? And therefore it applies to Shorisurim? It's also because of Adabar Dover, it applies to Shabbos and to nothing else. So perhaps that's part and parcel of the Gemara Shaila, of what exactly is the reason for this particular Issa. Now, in general, this applies both to Issuri Deraisa and Issuri Derabbanan. I may not ask, if I can't do it myself, I can't ask a non-Jew to do it. Now, when it comes, let's start off with the simple case. I don't talk about Pekuach Nefesh. That's, you know, I always tell my Talmidim, that's not part of the discussion. Koach Nefesh is doing all the Isurah and the Torah except for three. There's nothing to talk about. That's not an issue that we discuss. You know, when we talk about what's Mutter and Osir, we don't talk about Koach Nefesh. Koach Nefesh is axiomatically Mutter. So let's forget about Koach Nefesh. So how much for a Dvar Mitzvah? Can I ask a non-Jew to do an Isa Deraisa for me for the purpose of a Dvar Mitzvah? I got up Shabbos morning, and I want to learn. Oh, it's dark in my room. I have an incandescent bulb. It's an Issa D'Raisa to put it on. Can I ask a non-Jew if a non-Jewish worker there, please put on the light. It's a bar mitzvah. It's not for my kumbah. I want to learn. I don't have light. I want him to put it on. So there are more quotes about a Yitra, who says that one is allowed to ask a non-Jew to do a malacha d'oraisa for a dvar mitzvah. However, the consensus of the Achronim who came after the Rambam is not in accordance with the Rambam. And they say that we should not at all rely upon this balaita, and one, even for the purpose of a dvar mitzvah, I may not ask a non-Jew to do an isa d'oraisa. However, this view does find its place in the realm of halacha, that for tzorche rabim we rely upon it. So, for example, let's say the Erev falls down on Shabbos, so we have to fix the Erev. And even though it may involve a malacha d'oraisa fixing the Erev, but we're allowed to ask a non-Jew even to do an isa d'oraisa for the sake of tzorche rabim. Or, Rav Henkin, this is what Rav Henkin writes, it is safer that the Midrash and Klal Yisrael is to rely upon this with tzorche rabim, this shita. When I was a child, one of the shuls that I davened in, the Mizrahi of East New York, the lights did not go on and off automatically in that shul. It had a whole switch box, and you had to push all the switches in to put the lights on, and you had to pull them out, pull out the connections at the end of the davening to put the lights off. And there was an Irish non-Jew who used to come every Shabbos and put it before davening and put the lights on, and come after davening and put the lights off. So for tzorche rabim, we rely upon this Ramah, that for a mitzvah, for the purpose of a mitzvah, one is allowed to ask a non-Jew. I mean, today we rely less upon it, because we live in a digital age today, so we have less and less need for such things. But nevertheless, at times we rely upon it, something comes up which affects the operation of the Beis HaKnesses, so we're allowed to use a non-Jew for that purpose.
Why was he letting the lights out?
I would presume that that's part of it. In other words, the expense of keeping them down is part of the tzorche mitzvah of putting them on. In other words, they couldn't afford, to leave in a huge building, the lights burn the whole day, needlessly. So that's also part of the dvar mitzvah, to make it feasible. Now, which points us, now we're dealing with Isurei D'oraisa. There's another major example of when we can ask a non-Jew to do an Isa D'oraisa for us, and that is the Tzorche Chayla. If a person is ill, meaning he's truly ill, he's not dangerously ill, and he's not slightly uncomfortable, but he's ill. It's the flu. What?
Does it mean
he's or not everyone gets it. Some people don't get into bed when they're sick. But, he should be bedridden. He has a systemic illness. Whatever it may be. There's some people that never get into bed. There's just, I don't think I ever saw my father lay in bed sick. I don't recall such a thing. Wasn't his thing. So some people just, even when they don't feel well, they just keep going anyhow. But that doesn't, mean that they're not ill. So for the purpose of someone that's ill, when we ask a non-Jew to do any and all malachas d'oraisa, so I could ask him to do all 39 of us malachas d'oraisa for me, if they're necessary for the sake of a chayla. There is a very interesting corollary of that in Siman Reish Nun Gimel, and this is a shaila that I have invariably, or I should say almost invariably, every single winter. By Murphy's Law, when did the boiler break?
Friday afternoon.
Right? It doesn't break Monday morning. Friday afternoon, all of a sudden the steam goes off. Do a stand on your head, you can't get the steam going again. Temperature is 25 degrees outside, and the boiler's broken. Call the boiler company, the guy will get to you eventually, He has 17 other calls to do today. It's a cold day, and a lot of people are having problems, He may get there before Shabbos. He may not get there before Shabbos. Even if he gets there before Shabbos, he may not finish till who knows when. So what's the story? What's the deal? What's the deal? So the halacha is a very interesting insight. The Shulchan Aruch records are called chayla meitzel tzinah. And when it comes to cold, we're not talking to be slightly colder if it'll be 60 rather than 68, but if it'll be cold, people take ill from cold. So the fact that they're exposed to extreme cold, we consider that we are already dealing with illness. And therefore, we allow a non-Jew to do a malacha, to light the boiler, to fix the boiler, whatever is necessary to get the steam going again on Shabbos. Well, if it's going to get cold, you know, it may have been warm, but now it's 25 degrees, and it's going to another 3 hours. If the steam doesn't go on, it's going to get cold. You know, you don't have to wait until you get cold.
Could we ask the boy to do something to prevent becoming cold in the same way?
Yeah. Yes, yes. Absolutely. The Rambam is clear that the din of chayla shein bo sakana is not only once the person is already a chayla shein bo sakana, but if there's a cause which is going to make him a chayla shein bo sakana, I know he's going to become. So then I can treat him already as a chayla shein bo sakana to prevent him from getting ill. But that's assuming that we're certainly going to get ill. It's not far-fetched. Now the halacha does insist that we use an accurate gauge, not just, you know, everywhere I call mutarim locha, call mechulim locha, in kan lo isa, you know.
People die every year in cold storm during cold times for lack of heat.
100%.
Really?
No, it does. It happens all the time. There's no question it happens. So I call choylem eitzel tzina. Now there's a whole, we're going to come to this in a moment, there's a whole other slew of cases where we allow isuri derabbanan and not isuri deraisa. So this points us to something which is very significant. If there are certain situations where I may only ask a non-Jew to do an isa derabbanan and not an isa deraisa, so then I have to have a good knowledge of what's an isa deraisa and what's an isa derabbanan. Otherwise I have no means of instituting this halacha. That is not easy to know. By a simple mathematical computation, we'll realize why it's not easy to know. So Hilchos Shabbos always seems somewhat mystifying. Why? Why is it mystifying? For a very simple reason. How many Obos Malachos are there?
39.
That we all know. Now, how many Toldos are there?
Thousands.
How many Toldos? Tell you the answer. It's Rishalmi and Klal Gadol that says Rish Lakish studied the Toldos for 3 years and he came to the conclusion that each of the 39 Obos Malachos has 39 Toldos. Rishalmi and Klal Gadol. So if we do a little, so imagine we have, right, a chart with 39 headings, and then we have under each heading, the heading is significant, and then there are 39 subheadings. So there were 40 in each column, times 39. So you get to 1,560. That the Gemara says in the first page in Baba Kama, that in Hilchos Shabbos, it doesn't make a difference, there's no different distinction between Obos and Toldos. They have exactly the same din. So we start off already with 1,560 Surah Deraisa. Ovos Malachos, in effect, Ovos told us. It's 1,560 aspects of Chilul Shabbos. Then we can factor in, there are other aspects of Shabbos. There's Mitzvah Saseh of Shabbos, of Kiddush, of Suda Shabbos, of Neiris Shabbos, Oynik Shabbos, Kovrit Shabbos. Then we can factor in, there are Isurei Deraisa, which are not Ovos Malachos. For example, I can't lead a behemoth around, have a behemoth do work. Shvisas behemta. According to many Rishonim, there's a tchum of Yud Bey's mill. It's 24,000 feet. I'm sorry, not 24,000. It's 48,000 feet, 12 mil. Each mil is 2,000 amas, is 4,000 feet. It's 48,000 feet. So 9 miles plus 1.5 miles. So if I walk further than that outside the Tchum and Shabbos, it's an Issa D'Raisa, according to many Rishayim. It's not Chayiv. It doesn't have a din of Chil or Shabbos in and of itself. It's not Chayiv Misa. But it's also, so we have other Issurei D'Raisa, which exist besides the one that are Obas Malachas. Then we have the principle of the Mishnah on the beginning of Masechet Obas, the first Mishnah, Asu Siyog L'Torah. So for every deraisa, there are all types of siyogim that the Rabbanon made. So if there are 1,560 Yisurah deraisa, we can have some idea of the number of siyogim that there are.
Siyogim with the Rabbanon.
Good.
But the Rabbanon makes...
So I wanted to know why it's so difficult to know Hilchos Shabbos. So each Issa D'Raisa probably has a number of Issurei D'Rabbanan concerning it, which affect it. And then we have the Minhogim, after all of that. So there are obviously thousands of things that we have to know to know on Shabbos. But the Institute of Halacha that we're talking about tonight, I have to know what's also with the Raisa, what's also only with the Rabbanan. Otherwise, I don't know where to begin, what I can ask a non-Jew to do, what I can't ask a non-Jew to do on Shabbos, under the conditions that it's mutter. So, the halacha demands, obviously, a very strong knowledge of Hilchos Shabbos, that I should have a good idea of what's awesome with the Raisa, what's only awesome with the Rabbanon. Now, what are the things which are mutter midrabbana? So, mutter midrabbana. When we're dealing with Amir al-Akum, so when do we allow Isur midrabbana? So, broadly, we have three cases. One is the Terech Mitzvah, that I want to learn in this room. Problem is, I don't have another room to learn in, whatever, all the lights are out, however that came to be, the lights are out. So I would like the non-Jew to put on the lights in my room so that I can learn on Shabbos. Now, suppose that I don't have incandescent bulb, which is the rice, I have a fluorescent, which is an Issa D'Rabbanan. So can I ask him to put on a fluorescent bulb for me? So the answer is, the Terech Mitzvah I'm allowed. I'm asking a non-Jew to do an Issa D'Rabbanan for the purpose of doing a mitzvah. That's permissible on Shabbos.
Straight out?
Straight out, yes.
Well, I say,
yes.
Could you turn on that light?
Yes, you got it.
Okay, I just want to be sure I understand.
But an incandescent bulb, you wouldn't be able to. Unless, instead of a holy shameless account.
That's something else, yeah. But the Terech Mitzvah.
But for example, you have your dining room light goes out. And there's incandescent bulbs. So it's
a
Terech Mitzvah, but it's not. Is it considered a
Rabban?
Because there are many people involved.
Usually not. No. It's somewhat of a problem, but there's nothing much you can do about it.
Hashem Prophets, would that be considered a Rabban?
Maybe. I don't know. Maybe. But it's a problem. There's no simple solution to that problem.
Have it in Shul on Yom
Kippur
or something.
Tzorchei Rabbim, I mentioned before, we allow it. Yeah, for Tzorchei Rabbim, it's permissible. So, if the lights go out, it's a problem. Yontif, it's interesting. Yontif, one could ask a non-Jew for the purpose of a mitzvah, let's say the Tzorch Sudas Shabbos, or Sudas Yontif, talking about, not Sudas Shabbos. The lights went out, and it's not very comfortable to eat without the lights being on. One could ask a non-Jew to put the lights on. Or if you needed to cook something for Shabbos on an electric stove, you could ask a non-Jew to light the fire for you. Or even a gas stove. Why? Because maver, lighting a fire, lighting a match, creating a fire on Yontif, according to most Shittas, is only awesome with the Rabbanos, not an Issa D'Raisa on Yontif. No, if you put the food on yourself, there's no bishalakam. Who cares if he lit it? As long as he put it on the fire, there's no bishalakam. That you have to do. You do have to be careful with. I mean, certain people get all confused. You know, let's say they found that they run ben ashmoshes, and the cholent is uncooked. The crock pot somehow didn't go on. So they run and they get a goy to put it on. Okay, ben ashmoshes the torah mitzvah. You're allowed to get a goy, but they failed to realize the cholent is raw, and who plugged it into the wall? Non-Jew. So it's bishulakum. Bishul Akum. One has to keep track of that. You can't forget about the problem of Bishul Akum.
Is there a solution?
No. There is no solution.
If you take out the meat, would the beans be considered
No.
Carrots, if you have only vegetables, carrots would be.
Carrots, maybe. You can eat the carrots.
Onions?
I don't know. I'm not so sure. I'm not convinced.
Well,
there are achrayim that hold that you know you only make shahakal and onions.
Wouldn't there be another problem, Ralph?
Yeah.
If it was raw, that would mean you didn't start cooking it erev mivod yom.
True, but there are ways and means that could be mutter. You have a blech, for example, so you know that gets around that problem. If you have a blech. So there are ways to solve that part of the problem, but you can run into a Bishul Akum problem.
And we have to make sure it's cooked beforehand, that's a chumrah?
If we have a blech, yeah, it is a chumrah, but it's a very good chumrah, as Rav Henkins at Tzal pointed out, because in common practice we move pots around on the blech, we don't leave them in the same place. And if the food is not fully cooked, and I moved it from a place which is cooler to a somewhat warmer place, it would be actual Chilul Shabbos. And, you know, when I used to teach Hilchos Shabbos years back to high school students, I said, he's a Rebbe. What does it have to do with me? It's my mother's problem, Bishul, you know. What do I have to do with it? By the time I finished, they said, Rebbe, don't tell us anymore. We're getting too scared, frightened. Too much. So I always told them, you want to be Mechal Shabbos the easy way? I'll tell you how to do it. Effortless Chilul Shabbos. You know, people have a natural sense of curiosity. So you come home Friday night, you know, you're interested to see what your mother cooked. So you go around and you open up all the pots, you look inside, you smell the aroma, and you close them as you go on. Well, if one of those pots wasn't fully cooked, and you opened it and you closed it, you were just Mechal HaShabbos. Violated Bishul. So that's the reason that Rav Henkin suggests. Now, we make sure that everything is fully cooked when Shabbos begins. If for some reason it proved not to be possible, so I tell people what they should do is they should put the pot on the fire and don't touch the pot. Don't open it, don't close it, don't move it, just leave it there until tomorrow, until you're ready to take it off, and then take it off and use it. But just put it on the fire and don't move it an inch, a fraction of an inch. Just leave it alone. Totally hands off if that situation, you know, comes up. So with a blech it would be permissible, but you have to be very, very careful not to be Mechal Shabbos.
Why are you Mechal Shabbos by opening the pot?
The opening is not the problem. The problem is when you reclose it. Because anything which intensifies the heat and causes the cooking to take place on a more rapid basis is considered itself an act of Bishul. So,
wait a second, what happens if, for example, you had something and it was boiling, right?
Yeah.
So it's boiling Bishul? And if you put the pot and the cover on, it's still going to be boiling. It's not, the temperature's not going to change. It can't get hotter than boiling.
Well, that's true, but, you know, assuming the fire is hot enough to keep it at boiling.
Right. If so...
And the truth of the matter is, I don't know if that's exactly correct, that it can't get in a closed environment, it can get hotter than boiling.
Under pressure.
Whatever. This
you have to have it sealed. Otherwise it can't get hotter. You can't heat anything hotter than boiling, by definition.
It comes to steam?
Huh?
Because it comes to steam, you mean?
Yeah, you can't, you know, if something's boiling, it's, I assume it's at 100 degrees, right? You can't, atmospheric pressure. You can't have anything hot, boil hotter than that if it's...
Atmospheric pressure, does that mean a pressure cooker will boil at a higher temperature?
Of course. A pressure cooker, yeah.
Yes. Whatever, it's not, listen, it's not usually the case that you have something...
So official means boiling.
If you, you don't usually...
What the,
you don't usually have something where it's at a rolling boil, it's going to stay at a rolling boil.
It's not going to last for tomorrow
lunch. No, that's right, you know. Not usually.
But halachically, if you put the cover back, you're saying it's official.
Yes. Okay. In other words, you're good. You may have a case where it's so hot that it's not going to make a difference, you know. Mm-hmm. I just wonder, you're a little skeptical of practically that's going to happen. You know, there'll be a difference between the pot being open and closed. There will be heat loss. You know, when you uncover things, there's heat loss. When you put the pot back up, they start to, even in large cauldrons, you know.
Okay.
So, for the purpose of a Dvar Mitzvah, I could ask a non-Jew to do an Isur Drabbanan. That's number one. Second thing, which is Mutter, is for someone who is somewhat ill. He's not ill, but he's somewhat ill. He's uncomfortable. He's not feeling so well. Is he actually sick? No, he's not actually sick. But he's uncomfortable, and he doesn't feel well. So the case the Shulchan Aruch gives, that there's a person, and he didn't have enough blankets to get warm. He wasn't sick, and he wasn't about to freeze either. It wasn't that cold, but he was uncomfortable, and he could use another blanket to help him feel better than he is. And he's, as I said, he's somewhat ill. He's not 100% healthy, but sick he's not either. So the Shulchan Aruch, now, what's the Shulchan Aruch's case? The halacha is that to go from one private realm to another private realm, we need an Erev Chatzeres. We, in our language, we don't use the language properly. You know, the Erev can never fall down. Not in any halachically meaningful fashion. What is the Erev? The Erev is not the wires that go around. That's not the Erev. In fact, the official term for them is a Tzuras HaPesach. They have the format of a doorway. The Erev is the challah, the matzah that we use to unite everybody. So it might fall on the floor, but it's now going to, and it will have no halachic significance. In other words, the Tzuras HaPesach that falls down. So one has to have an Erev Chatzeres to go from one private property to the next. If I don't have an Erev Chatzeres, so it's also the Rabbanon to carry from one private property to the next. Even if they have, every private property by definition has walls around it. That's what makes it into a private property. It's fenced off in some fashion. But so I'm next door to the next person, but I didn't make an Erev Chatzeres. So with the Rabbanon, I may not carry from my Rishus to his Rishus. Now that being the case, so next door to me is a person that's somewhat ill. And I have a blanket, which he could use. But for me to bring it, there would be an Issa Darabonon. I would violate the din of Erev. So I could ask a non-Jew to carry the blanket from my house to his house. Because I'm asking the non-Jew to do an Issa Darabonon for the sake of a person who is partially ill. That's fine. Now the third case that the Shulchan Aruch gives us is the Tzorach Gadol, meaning for a great need. A great need could have a lot of different needs. The most common of the great needs, if not the only great need, is a significant financial loss. So I may ask a non-Jew to do an Issa Darabonon to prevent a significant financial loss. Now, there's a very interesting Shiloh, and in the world in which we live in, it has become much more relevant than it once was. Much more relevant, probably, than it was even in my childhood, I would imagine. And this is a shayla that the Achronim have. So we said, I can ask a non-Jew to do an Issa D'Rabbanan. I can't ask him to do an Issa D'Raisa. So let's say I ask non-Jew number one to ask non-Jew number two to do a malacha d'oraisa for me. So was that considered shvus to shvus? Because asking a non-Jew to do an iser is only with a rabbanim. So if I have a non-Jew ask a non-Jew, so he's asking him to do something which is also with a rabbanim, in effect. So was that shvus to shvus? Because now it's a non-Jew. I asked a non-Jew to ask a non-Jew. So I'm asking him to do, in effect, to tell the other non-Jew to do an iser d'rabbanan. So it's is that a shvus to shvus? Or not? So the prevailing view is this is not considered a shvus to shvus. And I may not ask a non-Jew. However, when under extenuating circumstances, the poskim are inclined in contemporary times to rely upon this view. Now, it's become much more essential, probably in today's world, that the nature of business today, you know, you're in a law business or some other business, and you have to FedEx overnight something to someone, and they want the papers, you know, it's Friday afternoon, and they call you, and they want these papers on their desk tomorrow morning to review them over the weekend. So now what can you do? Now the Haitzah is an Issa D'Raisa. So I can't really, and to overnight them, I'm in effect telling them to bring them on Shabbos. So if I sent it out Thursday and I let them bring it till Monday or Friday and they can bring it on Monday, it's their business when they deliver it. But if I insist I order overnight service, well, then they're not getting paid unless they deliver it tomorrow morning. So am I allowed to or not? So under extenuating circumstances, we rely upon the view that asking a non-Jew to ask a non-Jew was considered a shvus to shvus. That's, as I say, that's part of the contemporary world, you know. And my child didn't have FedEx, so it usually wasn't so simple to have, you know, an ongoing business to actually get these things done.
How can one be sure that the delivery man is not Jewish?
We rely upon the majority, unless we know specifically otherwise. The majority of 305 million Americans, the overwhelming majority are non-Jews, about 98% of the country. So, normally when I call FedEx, the guy that I call is not the guy that's going to send it. The guy even that picks it, he tells some other guy to pick it up. And that guy is going to come to me. He could be back in a station before Shabbos. And I didn't, you know, at first. So first of all, even if he's not, so his boss told him, whoever it is that gives him his orders, told him to pick it up. And now he went and brought it to some other guy who's told to go deliver it. So it's a whole chain. But the guy that actually comes to pick it up is by and large, you know, I ordered them through someone else. So it's a shvus to shvus.
You can't, obviously you can't do this on Shabbos, right?
No, you cannot do this.
This is only when you do this Friday afternoon, I assume.
Well, would you be allowed to do this on Shabbos? I mean, I can't see how it's going to come about on Shabbos. Because you engage in your business on Shabbos? That's, you know.
Let's say I'm a senator or somebody.
What?
I'm a senator and I have to get a...
Whatever, well, that's something else. Those type of people, there's a whole different set of halachas and how they have to fulfill their responsibilities. You know, that's...
With emails and PDF files, that problem can still happen, but I think the frequency is substantially reduced nowadays. Because you can email the document.
Again, that's true. In other words, now you have the opportunity to send it from your computer to computer by email. Right. Yeah, that's true.
It still can happen, but it's less frequent. That's my experience.
Is not handing the document to the delivery guy half an hour before Shabbos, and he's not likely to maybe come back to his depot until Shabbos has started, is that not an amira?
No, I would think it's mutter, because sof kol sof, he's not doing haitzah only on your, he's doing, it's just marba b'shiur. He's doing 100 haitzahs in his truck. So that I don't think you would ask for that. I don't think so.
you know, why do we have to rely on the idea that he has a voice to tell them? Let's say that was the guy that I
called. Well, what?
Let's say that was the guy that I called, and he came personally to my house and picked it up.
Yeah, but at the end, someone's going to do an actual malacha individually for your thing. They're going to bring it to somebody's door. That's not going to be in the truck anymore. So this is...
How about if it's totally automated? Malacha that doesn't involve an actual person. You program your bank online to pay your credit card bill on Shabbos. Is there any malacha issue there?
I haven't thought about it. I don't think that there should be. But I haven't thought, the truth is I've not thought through its implications yet.
There's no human being actually doing anything. It's all electronic. So it's like almost like setting a Shabbos clock. It's going to turn the lights on and off on Shabbos. It's going to deliver your money on Shabbos, but nobody's actually delivering the money.
Yeah, I'm inclined to think that it's mutter. As I say, I have not thought about it yet. But that's my impression. So there's a little bit of overview we've done tonight about the issues of Amir al-Akum, of engaging non-Jews in tasks on Shabbos, which we may not do ourselves.
Handing something into Federal Express, theoretically Friday afternoon for Monday morning delivery, is not, that's their problem, not ours.
That's correct.
Okay. I know some people...
Mailbox is less of a problem.